Steve, you're going to bother me now, aren't you?
Not at all, no. I don't think I'm going to give you much comfort. Well, first of all, what we've got to remember is that just to remind everybody, in a socialist society, there won't be restrictions on people being able to gain access to learning about whatever music or art or any sort of artistic expression. That'll be there. And there's been a good example of what people can do in Venezuela with a thing called the system, where they've taken poor kids. I mean, they're taking poor kids, and they've got them up to an international bloody standard as a youth orchestra. People with absolutely nothing whatsoever in terms of, hardly anything in terms of income. So I could see that occurring in a socialist society. The art would be more participatory, but I'm struggling to think what it would be like. I think maybe virtuosity could well be lost in favor of the group activity. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to say to Carla that I think it might end up sometimes a bit like the 25th Tractor Brigade or something like that, and that would be the subject of art. I hope not. I hope we've got a bit more sensitivity than that. But I can't see where it would be coming from, you know, because you look at pop music as an example. I mean, a lot of that's just braggadocio, isn't it? It's just look at me, aren't I wonderful type of thing. I can't see that. And I can't see being songs about sexual jealousy and so on and so forth. Or even Three Steps to Heaven. I can't see that being realized as a single one to socialism. So I'm sorry, I've not got much optimistic to say to you.
Yeah, I know how you feel. And it's really, really difficult to imagine. But you know what? I may have said all those things and I'm kind of into all this culture and art and everything, but I would gladly give it all up for a socialist society. So, Howard?
Just a bit of a corrective here, and I hope people don't find this too puritanical, but certain terms are being flung about like confetti and in ways that, you know, normally don't happen within the party. I mean, in particular, I'm thinking of working class, middle class and bourgeoisie. I mean, people seem to be using middle class in a way that we in the party, we don't use it. I mean, there are two classes in society. There's the working class, which is everybody who has to work for a living, you know, at whatever level and owns nothing but their labour power. And there's the capitalist class who own virtually everything and don't have to work for a living. And it's confusing, I think, to sort of say, well, this was a middle-class thing, etc., when, A, it's a sort of term that is used very loosely and nobody really knows what it means. Well, maybe we do in a vague kind of way. And there's bourgeoisie, which, I mean, historically the bourgeoisie was the capitalist class, the rising capitalist class. And if you say something is bourgeois these days, well, if you're using it just to mean it's something that, you know, people who have got, who are able to survive reasonably well in capitalism, but are workers. If you're using it to mean that, well, I think it's confusing, put it like that. Certainly confusing to people who aren't sort of involved in the party and know what we stand for. So I just think we need to be a little bit more rigorous in our use of terminology. Sorry, nothing to do with the subject, I know, but, I'm listening and, it seems to me that it's worth mentioning.
Fair enough.
Paddy? Fair comment. I mean, I mentioned, when I was mentioned talking about prog rock, I'm fairly sure that what I said was it was seen as middle-class white men with no problems. I think I took the trouble to explain that. But, of course, Howard is quite right. We don't normally use terms like that. But we are talking about cultural delineations, so it's not quite the same thing, is it? But point taken.
Would anyone else like to comment?
Yes, Carla, but I can't stay anywhere in the 4-5 text channels.
Go ahead, Mike. It's Mike. Isn't
okay.
It? Go
yes.
Ahead.
There's no speaking cue. I thought it was a very interesting talk, and that you weren't using the puritanical version of culture that Howard was mentioning there. We all know there's two classes, but we are talking slightly different about it. I'd be interested to see what the people who grow up in the social society, what artwork they will do, because they won't be anything like the ones that achieve social society. I would see a lot of folk music, old-fashioned folk music, nice and gentle stuff and really raving stuff. But I wouldn't like to say any more because it's so far in the future to think about. And there's so many restrictions. I mean, all the music that's been mentioned now is all sort of English and American stuff. There's lots of different music throughout the world. So I wouldn't like to say anything about opera or prog rock or any of that crap. Because we'd be liberated in a way we'd never achieved before. Most of the music we will make, if we get social society, will be sad remembering the people who died to achieve it. And memories of that will linger. People who come, the children of this revolution will have a totally different view. And they will use the media, the technology that are available. As Paddy pointed out, there's new ones coming up. And they will make it be something like that. But a very interesting talk tonight, Carla.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. I agree with you. It's and I also think that maybe there'll be a lot more sharing of cultures and art. As in, as I said, the stuff I'm into is kind of very European mainly. And so, you know, post-capitalism, we'll be a lot more, well, there won't be any countries. So we'll share so much more and we will learn so much more and be involved in other people's culture and their history and their stories and their art forms. So, yeah, I don't know. Sounds a bit more interesting now. Anyone else? Adam?
Yeah, you just said there won't be any countries in a socialism. Of course, there won't be any states in socialism, but there'll be lots of different cultures and people speaking different languages with different traditions. So I don't think it's going to be necessarily one world culture. But isn't that something called world music, whatever that is? Anybody know what it is?
I know what it is. World music is just music from other countries, other cultures. You know, African, Indian, that's world. That's what I can and understand as world music. I've got loads of it. South American.
Sounds a good idea anyway.
Yeah, music I think is one of the ones that's the easiest. Now, there'll be plenty of music, I think. So, Richard.
Just briefly, if anybody, I mean, we're talking about world music and it's like crossover music, you know, where different cultures, the styles of music in different cultures come together. You might get a little bit of that in a socialist society. If anybody is actually interested in that, SOAS, just off Russell Square, the university there, they have free concerts regularly all throughout the year. I suppose not this year, but, of world music where they invite musicians from all over the world to come and perform. So, I mean, I've been going to that for quite some time. And it's really amazing to hear the different styles of music from all around the world. So maybe you will get that in a socialist society where different cultures will come together. I guess, like Adam, we won't just have one culture around the world, but I think there'll be a lot more crossover between them. Well, I don't know, I would guess.
Yeah, I think so too. Thanks, Richard. Fraser?
Hi, I wanted to make a comment on the the idea of world music. I've seen this video from this channel that I watch on YouTube quite frequently. I think I'll put the link to the video that I'll mention in the speaking queue when I'm done speaking. But I wanted to mention that even when we think about world music within the context of the time that we live in, capitalism, you know, etc. It's kind of a lot of this music is either sort of plagiarizing indigenous music, or it gives the appearance of it being, for lack of a better word, I'd excuse any offense, for it to be ethnic, or for it to be sort of ethnically pluralist, or come off as something which is more than simply one culture. I think that the idea that we have of kind of culture as being segregated to nations, and the concepts that we have of them, really mystifies how we can think about how something like music would function under a system without those kinds of distinctions. And I think in that sort of way, kind of the points that I've been making, it's near impossible to know what it will be like, but it's something that has to be achieved, I think.
Yeah. When you say plagiarism, are you talking about like cultural appropriation?
Yeah, but sort of in general, I think some of the more major artists, when it comes to the kind of specific sort of melodies or pieces of music which have been used in kind of in the New Age era, you know, in the 90s and so on, in the video there's this one particular example, you know, of course lots of others, dozens of others, where I think it's this sort of indigenous music which has been taken, and it's been used for advertising. It's been used for, you know, I think it was used in a Horrible Essences advert or something like that. It's all about the appearance of a sort of multiculturalism. And I think that it was also used in either the Olympics or some world sort of kind of sports thing. I don't really remember. It's a kind of thing of sort of, you know, Soviet Union's collapsed, so now we can have world unity, that sort of appearance of world unity, I guess. Like the sort of Fukuyamist perspective of the end of history, I think. I'll just put the video in the chat and let other people speak.
Right, okay, I get you, yeah. Okay, thanks. Yeah, thanks for doing that. That'll be interesting. Joel?
Yes, I mean, world music was a marketing tool. I mean, I used to work in record shops, and I mean, there was a period where if anyone asked for something from another country, it was very, very, very unusual. But when the record companies start to see certain artists starting to have some success, I mean, the world music thing is a marketing tool. And way before the term world music, there used to be a thing called exotica, which sort of like tried to depict sort of like people living in the South Sea Islands and that sort of thing. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, world music, first and foremost, is was a marketing tool. And, yeah, I mean, people from different countries do collaborate, more so now than they used to. But, yeah, it's, as I say, I mean, people from other countries collaborating is happening now, musically.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have said it's necessarily a marketing tool. It's used as a marketing tool, like loads of other things. But
well, that's what it was, though. I mean, they wanted to they wanted to sell it, and somebody came up with this term, world music. I mean, it's...
I see what you mean.
You've heard the term acid jazz. I mean, sort of somebody just flippantly there's a particular type of music being played and somebody jokingly said, oh, it's acid jazz. And again, that became another way to sell a certain type of music back in the 80s.
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you're saying, John, about the title world,
I mean, it's, as we know, I mean, selling music is, that's what it's about. I mean, they want to sell it. They want to make money from it, the record companies or music companies.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, thanks. Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to sort of like, I think what Joel is saying is right. And also, you know, which happened not just with world music, but, you know, you get some young working class blokes who are playing the guitar and they're just hung out to dry by it, by the people with the money. And, you know, certainly that's happened it happened to the Bundu boys, for example. But the point I was going to make is just sort of something that Fraser said about, you know, like appropriation of art. And one in particular issue is Australian Aboriginal art, you know, where sort of for years and years people just, you know, like took absolutely no interest in who'd created it, you know, royalties or anything, to the extent that a university actually had a conference on, you know, like the appropriation of Aboriginal art. And the pictures that they used to illustrate the, you know, like the documentation, were all also stolen. You know, no one got royalties for it at all. Sorry, I suppose this is slightly off, but it is something that is particularly annoys me about capitalism.
Oh, it's a valid comment, Vin.
Yeah. Bundu boys, I really like them. What happened to them?
I mean, Andy Kershaw, I think he was the best man at one of the guys' wedding, and he got into sort of like massive, he died, and his wife was living in poverty, and, you know, like, it was suddenly, you know, and there was a lot of, you know, a lot of hardships suffered, yet, you know, like, this was a band that, well, you know, I mean, a friend of mine, a friend of mine, Francis Malloy, wrote a book called No Mate for the Magpie, which is like a story about a working class Protestant Catholic girl growing up in Northern Ireland. And it's a marvellous book, No Mate for the Magpie, if you read it. And she was hung out to dry by Virgo, you know, because she trusted them. Oh, they're a great women's press. They'll do the right thing for me. Sorry?
Do you mean Virago?
Virago. What did I say? Did I say? Oh, yeah. I thought maybe I'd say Farago.
No.
But, you know, because she didn't have, because she, you know, she was at a party, you know, she had to go to these things to help sell the book, and she got talking to an agent, and the agent could not believe the sort of like the shitty deal that she got from Virago, to the extent that she couldn't afford, she didn't have enough money to continue writing. She had to go back to being a cleaner because she'd been cleaned out by Virago, you know. It's like art. I mean, art under capitalism, you know, it's kind of, it's an opportunity for the rich to do something, you know. I mean, not exclusively, but, you know, it's an opportunity for exploitation, along with anything else. You know, under you know, once prehistory has come to an end, you know, like real history, then so long as there are people who are going to produce the raw materials happily enough, they're gonna, you know.
Yeah, and I guess some women have no qualms about exploiting other women either.
Yeah, well, it's a class thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, we can be divided by race, gender, age, sexual orientation, the lot.
Yeah. Thanks, Vin. Jordan?
Yeah. I was just basically just going to say, super co-signed to what Joel said. World music is a capitalist psyop. It's a fabrication. It doesn't even exist. It's a bunch of genres that aren't even related in any way that they just kind of threw together and were like, okay, here, buy this. So that wouldn't even be a concept anymore.
Well, except for other countries do produce music and it's pretty good. And I don't
know. Oh, no, yeah, no, it's fire. There's world music that's fire, but I don't think that it would all be considered the same genre anymore because it's all different.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so I'm leaving this link up here that Fraser's put here. Okay, anyone like to add anything else? Any other points that other comrades have made or?
Just a very quick point, and it's a bit tangential, but when you got these electronic instruments, or rather, when you got valve amplifiers and electric guitars, it had exactly the same effect as any other introduction of new technology in any other industry will have. In that instance, it threw out of work so many people that were working in jazz, in dance bands, and so on and so forth, because you could fill a big room now with three guitars and a drum kit, whereas before there would have been 15 or 16 people employed each night keeping people dancing. So it's exactly the same technological effect as robots are having on industrial production nowadays. It gets rid of labour.
Yeah.
And even worse when you look at karaoke.
Don't mention karaoke to me. Actually, it's interesting that the focus seems to have come down to music. And I'm just thinking that actually music is kind of the thing that kind of everybody likes. You know, we're not all into opera, we're not all into looking at paintings. But it's like everybody, just really likes music. Different types, whether it's jazz, whether it's rock, whether it's punk, whether it's whatever it is. But it seems to me that music is the kind of great leveler and that everyone seems to be able to relate to music.
There's not going to be waltz and stuff like that. I just can't see that existing. I can see it going back to there's a particular peasant dance that's still danced in Brittany, which I'm afraid I'm not really sure what I don't know what it's called, but it's basically everybody in the room joins into a chain. And it's basically on the rhythm, it's step to the left, close your feet, step to the left, clap your hands or something like that. It's really simple and it's a really interesting. 80 people do this and it's just astonishingly, it looks astonishingly boring side to my way of thinking. But this is a type of dance that's easy to participate in. And it obviously makes you feel good because, I mean, let's face it, something like line dancing seems to make people feel good for some reason. Or strolling, if you go to rock and roll, you see these things, this thing called strolling. I hope socialism isn't going to have strolling, but never mind.
Steve, sounds remarkably like the hokey cokey that they do at dances, and you get a great line of them, and it's exactly what they do. So,
or conga, something like that.
That's it. Your right foot in, your right foot out. It is a conga, yeah. Okay, Howard.
Just to comment on what Steve just said about electric guitars doing loads of musicians out of work. Yeah, certainly that it's akin to what's happening now with robots. But I mean, it's happened throughout the history of capitalism, capitalism is constantly innovating, reorganizing, and people suffer from this because they're thrown out of work and, you know, they live desperate lives and so on. But It's short term, isn't it? As capitalism innovates and reorganizes, different kinds of work sort of come to be needed. And if that weren't the case, there'd be virtually no employment now, because every time people are thrown out of work, you know, there'd be more and more and more and more. It doesn't happen like that. I mean, capitalism goes up and down in terms of employment, not directly related, however, to innovation necessarily. So although nowadays we've got robots sort of apparently sort of putting people out of work, in the slightly longer term, that isn't going to be an enormously great factor in terms of employment or otherwise, because different kinds of employment will be needed. Short-term misery, as usual for workers, yes, but doesn't mean to say that there's going to be long-term lack of work around. It's not the way capitalism works.
Yeah.
Can I just come back in quickly on that?
Yeah.
I mean, I totally agree with what Howard. It's just that I wanted to look, to stress the precarious nature of employment faced with the technological change. And the people that it affects is us. It's the working class that it affects all the time. Whether it be somebody playing the saxophone at Bolton Pally the dance, or whether it be some engineer that gets put out of work by a robot. It's just the precarious nature of our as wage slaves.
Okay, Steve. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
Paddy.
Well, just on the idea when this thing about electric amplifiers and things put loads of musicians out of work. I don't actually think that's the case. I think what happened was that these musicians who were in these big bands, and don't forget, big bands cost a fortune to put on. They would have hardly had any gigs, and they would have had to been on the road full time to make a living at that in big venues. I think these musicians would have just gone out and formed their own bands of four or five people. And what would happen? Would you get a sort? You've got a kind of democratization of music. More people had access to it. Gigs were a lot cheaper, or even free. Which is the case now with bands of four or five people in them, on the question of how socialism would look at art, I think one thing that I think it's been mentioned tonight, but maybe not brought out very much, is that in socialist society there'd be no concept of art as a commodity, as something you consume. I think that would be quite alien to people. I think art, whether it's music, whether it's the creative, the plastic arts, I think that sort of lives within us as humans. And I think socialism would make this a participatory thing. It would be something, you know, that's been mentioned before. People would join in, whether it was line dancing, God help us all, whether it was music. And something occurred to me a minute ago that I just thought I'd relate. I mean, I've been in bands myself for years and years, and it's quite good fun. You get up there, you just sort of make a loud, terrible racket, and people seem to like it or they don't, and you get a bit of beer money for it. And I've done this for a long time, but I had one experience one time which was completely different from this. I was at some sort of dippy festival, and it just happened that I had an African drum, and there was an African drumming workshop, so I went along. And they were ridiculously hippie about it, and they wanted us all to feel the force and feel the energy and feel all the chakras and all this sort of crap. But eventually we got to the point where we learned a few basic rhythms, sort of three or four rhythms, and you had a lead who would hit their little sort of drum with sticks that you could hear them above everybody else. And then we went into the actual drumming session. And it was in this massive, massive tent, and there was about 100 people playing these African drums, and I was just one person doing the same thing as everybody else. And as soon as we hit these drums, the floor shook. I'm not kidding. It was just the most elemental feeling. It was incredibly, it was thrilling, actually. It was like no experience I'd ever had. And then we played through these three or four riffs. It cycled through them, you know, changing the riff each time signaled to change. And then all these kind of dancers came out, and they all just sort of whirled and did all this stuff. And it was quite incredible. It was so powerful. And all we were doing was a few riffs that we'd learned in about 15 minutes. And we just had these kind of like, you know, the combined effect of a mass of people doing really something really quite simple. Just, it just stayed with me. And it's quite different from anything else. You know, that participatory process of making music. But you could apply the same thing to other things, like creative arts, you know, people joining together to create a mural. I've never actually done that, but I can imagine that's a similar kind of feeling and something that I think that would be very common in socialism. I think art would be a participatory thing, and the idea that you sit there and watch it or consume it would be not unheard of, but I think it would be unusual, let's say.
Yeah, I really like the drum thing. That sounds, I'm imagining it now. It must have been amazing. Vin?
Yeah, what I hope for in a post-socialist, we've thrown out a lot of ideas as to how socialism is going to be, but I'm hoping the younger generation is just going to take the piss. You know, like there'll be all these revolutionaries who work really hard, dangerously to bring about this revolution. And like, their daughters and sons are thinking, what'll piss them off? I know, why don't we start doing statues of socialist realism and pretend that we like all the stuff that Stalin liked and that? I mean, I think it's kind of open up the imagination, but, you know, especially taking the piss out of the people who have gone before, really. Because I think we could, you know, they'll be suffering from, you know, oh, this was what it was like and you've no idea how it was to, you know, a bit of piss take. And, you know, like, confound all our expectations is, you know, what I've got to. Because they're going to be saying, shit, but, you know, you've got us through this. But, you know, we've got a lot of work to do to sort out this frigging world that you took your time to sort out for us.
Quite right. Quite right, Vin. Richard?
I really like that idea of Vin's. But I really wanted to come back and just sort of say something about Paddy's idea. Because I suspect that that's going to be the case as well. That, you know, there is something slightly alienating about sort of standing in a big arena or sitting in a concert hall and listening to a band or a group of musicians performing for you. And sorry to go on about this again, but in societies which are genuinely collective, in hunter-gatherer societies, music is entirely participatory. People come together to sing. Now, they sing all the time, all the way through the day. They sing when they're doing things collectively. They sing when they have special rituals, usually in Africa on the dark of the moon. And they will get together and they will sing for 48 hours without stopping. They will just go on. And the music, say, of the people in sub-Saharan Africa has UNESCO World Heritage status. It's extraordinary. You get people coming together and somebody will start off a line and then somebody will join in and you will get this extraordinary polyphonic music developing, which expresses the fact of that they are a community. The music is not just a entertainment. I mean, it is. It's because for hunter-gatherers, they live very much in the present. They're not like farmers who are always worried about making sacrifices to in the hope that things will come out in the end. Like in our society, we have a delayed return society as well. Hunter-gatherers, their music, like everything else, is dedicated to their awareness of the moment and of their awareness of themselves as a community. So if a socialist society turns out to be anything like I imagine it would be, it won't be the same, but it would have certain aspects in common with it. And I would certainly expect it to have a lot more music, to have a lot more of a social, a direct social role as an expression of who people are and who people are as a community.
Okay, thanks, Richard. Vin, can you mute yourself, please?
Yep, sorry.
Thank you.
There we go.
Okay, right. Joel?
Going backwards a bit, when sort of pop music started to become popular, it wasn't an intended pun that, but the jazz musicians at that time started to sort of lose sort of opportunities to perform, so they had to go into studio work, doing sessions and also going on television and also doing things like jingles. So they had to find other ways to sort of make a living.
Right. Steve?
Well, I just want to mention choirs. I mean, when you, I can't sing, but when you see people that have learned to sing as a group, it's utterly fabulous. I can see that being going along the sort of participatory stuff that the drumming that Paddy was talking about. In Uruguay, Uruguay and Brazil, they have how are they called? Sorry, it's gone. But basically, just groups of drummers that have several dancers with them, and just around the streets, called candombe. They go around the streets. This is the Uruguayan version. It's obviously come from black slaves in the past, and it's absolutely a bit weird to see, but it's absolutely fascinating, absolutely deafening as well. By the way, you won't have to wear the practice because it drives you around the bleeding twist.
Yeah, I've heard that and seen that. It's a bit like Santeria, isn't it? Okay. Steve?
No, I finished, sir.
Okay. Nicola?
Hello.
Hi, Nicola.
Oh, hi all. Thanks for having me. I've just some points that I've been wanting to interject with along the way, so they're not exactly joined up, but to me, art is all about self-expression and communication. And I think that when there's a radical lifestyle change, that these kind of things will flourish. People have the time to express themselves and want to communicate with people, and people will want to listen. And someone said about pop disappearing. I think that's probably right, and not much great loss there probably, but to the extent that it's kind of driven by commercial and profit motives nowadays, it's quite, on loads of levels, it's quite artificial. So I think that the artificial aspect of that would disappear, and kids sometimes, they want to be pop stars, they want to be pop stars, perhaps not so much to express themselves, but with pappy songs and things, just to escape their lives, to be a superstar and to live a rich and carefree and, a nice life. And that perhaps some of those people wouldn't bother. They'd just find something else to do that, they'd be living the dream. And also someone else mentioned about that there might be a kind of dumbing down, there might not be so many virtuosos. I kind of take exception to that, really, because, I think with more time and resources and, a lot of people that wouldn't get the chance to express themselves nowadays would flourish, that there'd be a new kind of a golden age of art. So, yeah, that's my 2p.
Oh, thank you, Nicola. Yeah, I go along with that. And I agree that the art is self-expression. It is something that you do for yourself, basically. And if other people appreciate it or get something out of it, then that's even better. But, yeah, does anyone want to come in on anything Nicola's said or commented? Paddy?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I can't remember who it was that said this. It was years and years ago where I read it. The argument was basically, think how many millions of people in capitalism are just kind of wasted and destroyed by the system. you know, think of the bottom billion for a start off. It's you know, their entire lifetime is just a struggle just to basically survive. They haven't got any time for art. They haven't got any time for music. You know, if they had any kind of, if any of them people in this situation, you know, had any kind of predisposition towards music, it would never be allowed to come out. And think of all the people through history that's been true of, and how many people have to work so hard that, you know, that all they can do when they get home is just sort of, you know, zone out with the TV or with alcohol or drugs or something like that. So I think Nicola's point is well made. I mean, I think that socialism would be an absolute flowering of new potential artistic ability when the sort of onus for supporting yourself, for finding work, finding enough to live on, is taken off people. The argument I read was, think how many Mozarts we've killed. You know, think how many Beethovens have just been destroyed by poverty without ever being able to discover their ability. You know, how many great artists we've lost because capitalism has wasted so many people's potential. So if you think about it like that, then, yeah, I think socialism will be a golden age.
Yeah, I think we'll all agree. I think we all agree with that. Vin?
Sorry, I have to mute and go and find it hard to unmute. Sorry, I'm talking a lot this time. But actually, yeah, Thomas Gray's Elegy in a Country, I can't remember the name of the poem. Courtyard, Country Churchyard, Elegy in a Country Churchyard, makes that point about, you know, people being too poor not to have been able to, you know, we talked about a village Hampden being missed. But I think I'd like to get back to, like, William Morris, who kind of, his idea was to bring together work and art, you know, and like your work is going to be an expression. I'm thinking that art will extend to mathematics, you know, to creativity, to mechanics, you know, because we're not, you know, we're not selling our labor. We're sort of like producing, and, you know, a sculpture, you know, a machine. You know, a machine to increase the efficiency of agricultural production. It's kind of all going to be out then in under socialism, isn't it?
I guess. Art's a big title, a big subject. It's creative. It's creation, isn't it? Okay. Anyone else want to come in, or should we call it an evening?
You could call for, ask if any applications.
Any what, Steve?
Any applications for membership. we've a couple of non-members.
Okay.
Nice to see you, by the way, Nicola. And Millie, may we call you by your correct name?
Sorry, Steve.
Yeah.
Can I just say we shouldn't be putting pressure on people to join. I mean, it's up to them to decide what they want to do and what they don't want to do.
It's a socialist joke. It wasn't intended.
Not a good one. Not a good one.
No.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's just Steve being Steve. So don't you take any notes of.
No, absolutely not. I mean, what one of the jokes in the past, and I believe this is some branch, I've forgotten which one was mentioned, but years ago I was told that one of the, probably Scotland, they used to have, they'd have a meeting, a public meeting, sometimes just a business meeting, and then they just turn around to the people that weren't members and say, what criticisms have you got of the Socialist Party Great Britain? And of course, everybody just shut up, like you're going to do.
Okay, is that Vin again? Vin?
Sorry, I don't think so.
Okay, no, I can see that you've been and gone. Okay, it's getting on now, and I think perhaps we'll call it an evening. I just want to thank everyone for making a good discussion and for indulging and for listening.
One last point.
Yeah.
You know that the picture at the railway station or a bus station, the American photograph.
Yeah, Jack Delano.
Coloured's waiting room, something yeah. like. If you look closely, there's a couple of posters for, I presume, a magazine, just on the left hand side of the photograph. And one of the headlines is something about Hitler's love. I mean, how many years? I don't know if anybody else knows. How many years have newspapers and documentaries, and television channels been living off bloody documentaries and Hitler's love life, or I was Hitler's architect and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because obviously that must be, that's either from the 50s or late or early 60s.
And the bingo tonight above it, the bingo tonight. Had bingo then as well. Good Lord. Yeah, okay.
Thanks very much, Carla. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening.